Hi, I'm Tom Luna. I'm a former school board member. I was privileged to serve as senior advisor to U.S. Secretary of Education Rod Paige. I also had the honor of serving for 8 years as Idaho State Superintendent of Public Instruction. During that time, I also served as president of the Council of Chief State School Officers. One thing I have learned in all these experiences is that educating children is not rocket science, it's more complicated. On my podcast, Swimming Upstream, we will visit with courageous leaders who challenge the prevailing tide and inspire all of us to swim against the current. Let's jump in. Welcome back to another episode of Swimming Upstream. Our special guest today is Manny Diaz, who is the Commissioner of Education for the great state of Florida. And Manny, you've been a guest on the podcast here before, and we appreciate you coming back. Folks, we're here at Excel and Ed in Oklahoma City. It gives us an opportunity to visit with education leaders from across the country. And so, Manny, thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
And for your service in Florida and your the work you do there that inspires work across the country.
Thank you, and it's great to be with you guys again here on this episode.
Yeah, perfect. Let's talk a little bit about, let's just jump right in and talk about some of the things that are going on in Florida. Florida has been a leader for many, many years in school choice efforts, and let's talk about the latest efforts and some of the results we're seeing in education as a result of expanding opportunities for parents when it comes to the school their child attends.
Well, we've really seen an incredible explosion, really across the country, but in Florida, I'm proud to say that, you know, we already had this so robust charter school ecosystem with 400,000 students, you know, 700 schools, but that demand for the tax credit scholarship that existed before 2019, when we passed the Family Empowerment Scholarship, I was still in the Senate. And then the expansions that have gone forward since then. And I'm happy to report that as we sit here today, there's now over 500,000 students in Florida participating in the Family Empowerment Scholarship, ESA, whether it be tuition or the a la carte education that is going on. And it's just been tremendous. It's gone along with the growth, you know, the net in-migration domestically into Florida. And we have seen a good growth of also of the options, because this is the scholarship we provide to families. They make the decision, right? That's the point of this. But you've seen now the private school options increase and more groups, ventures getting into that private school space and providing those options. And also other hybrid and other really innovative options that parents can choose from. Whether they go to school 2 days a week, you know, in the prep program, and they homeschool 3 days a week, a mix of that, or they're buying curriculum, they're hiring teachers, those kinds of things are exploding across the state. And I'm hoping that this explodes across the country, because it really does allow parents to guide their students' education.
Yeah, talk about the a la carte. I think that's what you're referencing towards the end, where traditionally when school choice does finally emerge in a state, it usually begins with something like a charter school, where you're picking between one option or the other. It's not a hybrid or an a la carte. Right. Talk about that opportunity and the benefit it provides families.
Well, you know what happens with you talk to homeschool families, and what happens a lot of times is when the kids are smaller and your elementary school subjects are easier for the parents to teach.
Sure.
But when you start getting into that middle school and you start getting into some of the higher maths and the sciences and that, parents don't generally feel comfortable with this. And so they're looking for options, and whether that be an online curriculum that they can add on to their programming at home, or now these a la carte options, where there are schools where they provide instruction a couple days a week, the parents continue their programming a couple days a week, and they mix and match, and maybe they hire a tutor to come in on certain subjects where they feel they need a little more. This includes the availability of being able to go on field trips and have those real life experiences. And I'll tell you one interesting thing that people don't think about is that this actually has provided or pushed, let's say it has pushed districts, traditional school districts, to change their thinking and get out of the box. A lot of them, when charters came along, have come up with all these academies and innovative programs, CTE, you know, career experience programs. But now what we're doing is looking at how do they leverage the resources they have, the classrooms they have, the teachers they have, to participate in that a la carte. Maybe you do want to go take a trigonometry class at your local high school.
Or a science lab.
Yeah. Or you're trying to take a dual enrollment course. This is going to add on to the experience and the programming that parents can now provide their child. And look, a lot of our parents have just decided, I'm going to go find the right private school setting for my kid, and that's fine. Or they're going to stay at a charter school, or they're going to go to a neighborhood school, or one of these academies, the districts. It really has functioned the way I think it was envisioned, which is it is not the government's role to tell parents where to put these kids. It's upon us to lay it out so they can kind of choose. And I've had two conversations today where people have told me that they have, you know, three or four kids, and each one of them is going in a different setting. One of them is at the traditional school, one of them is virtual, one of them is at a private. I mean, those options are really they have changed the game, I think, in our state, and it looks like it's heading that way nationally.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We raised six children, and this was before all these options were available, but even to get all six of those through high school graduation, it was six different paths.
Right.
A couple of them went to charter school. We homeschooled a couple for a few years. One of them graduated from a virtual school. I mean, it was just a different path. So like you, I'm assuming that most families aren't any different than mine, and they need lots of options if they're going to be able to get their children successfully educated and ready for the world.
Yeah, one interesting option is we passed three years ago now, a new authorizer allowing our state colleges to authorize charters, and we had the first one in Tallahassee State College, authorized their first school, and it's really career-oriented. They picked up kids from all over the area, and they were an A in their first year.
Oh, wow.
But the most interesting part of that is having the opportunity to go over there down the street from our building and sit with the kids and have them give you their life stories, like their academic success as compared to where they were before. Some of them were coming from schools that weren't performing that well, but others were coming from schools that were doing just fine. Just them individually, they were not doing fine. And they came to the school, and now they're doing robotics and all these other things. I mean, having all those options, I think, is what's important to make sure that parents can really choose. And now having the universal scholarship, I mean, kind of blows that open, right?
Yeah, that's tremendous. There are other things that Florida has focused on recently, and one of those is civics education.
Yep.
We see a lot of conversation across the country on that also. And talk about the programs and plans they have in Florida for not only improving children's knowledge and understanding of civics, but really it's important to understand what they do know and as they prepare for the world that awaits them.
Yeah, and I really have to credit Governor DeSantis coming in his leadership on understanding the importance of civics and how it had kind of fallen by the wayside nationally, and that creates a lot of the problems that we see from students not being well-versed on the system of government we have, how our elections work, responsibilities as a citizen. And so several programs have been put in place. We have a huge civics debate initiative now that all 67 counties are participating in. We host a national debate championship in Florida. We have a program called the Civic Seal of Excellence, which we put together with experts from all over the country. And this is training for our teachers. And it's not limited to just social studies teachers. The goal is to train as many teachers as possible so that our teachers are well-versed in civics and they can impart that knowledge. They complete the course to get $3,000 for that for that certificate. And so that's been very successful. We've added the components at the middle school and the high school, the exit exam, which mimics what a citizenship test would be.
Yeah.
We have the component in higher ed. A lot of people don't talk about that, but students have to take with their gen ed courses that meet the requirement for civics education. So now when our students leave our school system as a whole, they are well-versed and prepared to take on their civic duty at minimum as a voter, right? But as a citizen who understands the republic that we have and really, as our founders really intended it to be. You have to have an educated populace to maintain that republic. This gets you there. It's really a positive sign that we're seeing a lot of young people now really delve into this. But if you don't have a thrust to put it in, right, and make it important, it's not going to be important.
That's right.
So that's really been a great achievement we've been able to get to in Florida.
And you have one assessment that is similar to what somebody who wanted to become a U.S. citizen would take.
Right.
My experience with that is a friend of mine went through that process, and we were at a dinner, and he decided to throw out some of the questions that were on that test, and there was a lot of people kind of looking at their shoes, you know, that didn't know the answers, like how many Supreme Court justices do we have, or who is the who's the chief Supreme Court justice? Well, just questions like this.
But there's a it's a tough exam. I actually when I became commissioner, I asked to get a copy of it. I took it myself. There, you know, you have the basic, and I taught high school social studies, so a lot of those basic questions, that wasn't the problem. It really delves into Supreme Court cases that sometimes you get to a point where you might miss one or two. I mean, granted, if you can get a student to get 89 or 90 or 95% of that right, then we're on the right track. But it does delve into that, and I think it's a good exercise that everyone should go through, because understanding, I think, you know, something we've seen in our country as a whole is you've had immigrants coming in legally, right, that have become citizens, and the pride that they have in being Americans, and we had lost a little bit of that, right, in our own population, in our own native, you know, third, fourth, fifth, sixth generation people, and I think we're seeing some of that now coming back, but I think it's an important tool to remind us that we should have it. We have to have an understanding of our system of government. Otherwise, it's going to cease to exist at one point. You can't maintain it if you don't understand it.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Let's talk of another thing Florida has always been known for, at least for the past 10, 15 years, is the work in early literacy and going into early childhood education. So talk to us about some of the new things Florida is doing to expand those opportunities and improve children's academic success.
Yeah, I mean, this is a thrust that goes all the way back to Governor Bush, you know, and what we've done over the last few four or five years is the legislature has really invested in early learning, and we figured out, look, third grade retention has to be there because you have to have a marker, but it starts way earlier than that, and now we've implemented progress monitoring at our early grades, which allows our teachers to be able to assess, take the feedback that they get immediately, and go ahead and make changes in the plan for these students, and really setting that foundation. If you set that foundation early, we all know if you set it by third grade, that's going to determine the path of that student. If you can't read by third grade, you're going to have issues going forward, and it becomes harder and harder to remediate that the further out you get. If you can attack this early, and we're going to continue to make those investments, and we're looking at other things like core knowledge curriculum to get in there and really set a foundation for our students so they can be successful going forward. And it makes the job of our teachers as they go up in third, fourth, fifth grade that much easier, because the expectations that we put on teachers when a student is behind in third grade, for them to catch them up as they're going forward.
Yeah.
And it, you know, if you don't know how to read, if you can't read, you can't read to learn everything else, even math, it all becomes very difficult.
Yeah.
And so I think that's gonna, we will continue to make those investments and make those adjustments to make that important. I think we've figured out that that's the piece that makes everything else go.
Yeah, one of the things that states all across the country are dealing with are teacher shortage, teacher retention, teacher recruitment. Right. I'm assuming Florida's not immune to this, and some of the things you described would definitely encourage teachers to stay in the profession when they're getting the kind of help and training they need, whether it comes to literacy and providing extra support for kids that struggle. But what are some of the other things that Florida's doing when they look to deal with the issues of teacher shortage and the number of people not coming into the profession?
Yeah, I think what you have seen nationally is a shortage of employees, workforce across the board, not just education. And despite the rumors, we've actually been a little better off in Florida than other states. However, we've taken an aggressive approach. There's the teacher salary allocation, which has invested now $1.25 billion over the last 4 years directly into teacher salaries that never existed before in Florida. Number two, we've created all these alternative pathways to go ahead and bring people into profession that have content knowledge, that have other life experiences. And then you have the teacher apprenticeship program, which now allows us to take individuals who may be working at a school, have an interest in education, and take them through an apprenticeship model with a mentor teacher so they can gain those skills they need. You know, you go through the teacher education program, that's fine. We're not even getting all, you know, a majority of our teachers from there anymore. But those skills, the book skills are one thing. Being in a classroom with a mentor teacher and having these people ready to go on day one when they come out. Remember, they're in the classroom every day, working with a mentor teacher, actually teaching, going through what happens in a classroom daily, and honing in those skills. And then a massive push from us to enhance our professional development and add to that the Teacher Bill of Rights that was passed a couple of years ago. Because one of the things teachers talk about when you ask
talk questions. Talk a little bit more about
So when you ask the question of what is the problem, of course, a lot of people talk about salary.
Right.
But if you ask teachers, a lot of times it's not even the number one issue. It's the respect for the profession.
Yes.
It's the professional development and professionalism. And so the Teacher Bill of Rights basically gave back all the rights to the teacher in the classroom to maintain control, to be in charge of their classroom, and not to be in fear that they were going to be a scapegoat for trying to implement what they're supposed to be doing in the classroom, and that is teaching kids. I mean, teaching and learning should be going on, but you have to maintain, there has to be classroom management. And so that was a message to our teachers that we're supporting them, that they are professionals. You add salary allocation to that, you add professional development to that. I think really we have to change the way we look at teachers. For a long time, because of unions, right, you'd look at teachers as if they were shop workers, nothing mm-hmm. against that. That's mm-hmm. a different profession. They're professionals that have degrees. A lot of times they have higher degrees. Yet in the salary structure and the way that it's negotiated and all that, it's treated like it's
everybody's the same,
right? And it can't be that way. I think bringing that element of professionalism and treating that individual teacher as a professional is going to elevate the profession, and you're going to have a feeling of you have to boost morale, and you do that by investing in salaries, but you also have to do that by investing in their professional development and not having them sit in a room somewhere where they're just checking their email and waiting for the time to go by so they can check off they got those points, right? It should be actual techniques, tactics, and them honing their profession and inspiring
to their needs.
Inspiring them.
Yeah, I love that. That's great stuff. I wish we had more time, but I want to talk to you about one more thing. Florida just announced a program where they are providing more transparency to the content that is in the classroom. And we've heard for the past few years about parents' concerns, and I think the pandemic kind of opened up the fact that parents now were teaching from home, and it was the first time many of them had access to what curriculum looked like and lesson materials. And they wanted more transparency, and people have been trying to figure out how to provide that transparency. And you, talk about the work that Florida just announced in that area.
Well, really, COVID changed that dynamic, right? Because for a long time, I was in the legislature kicking and screaming, trying to get people to pay attention to that. Parents are in tune with what's going on in schools, and they demand transparency. And so in Florida, under the Parent Bill of Rights, under transparency, the materials that are in our classroom should be available for our parents to be able to see them.
Yeah.
It should be available for taxpayers to know what's going on in the classroom. And again, I think we're at a shift here where parents have seen that they weren't happy about it. Now we have the transparency. The next phase is to move into really, you know, more core knowledge curriculum where we're teaching students how to read, reading comprehension, being able to have context and background so they can scaffold their learning, but at the same time reintroducing the fact that that kids love their country and understanding the stories about America all weaved in within that curriculum. And so I think parents want to see more of that and less of these divisive topics, less of these, you know, gender ideology, these things that don't belong in schools, right? Yeah. Adults can have those conversations. People want to have upper level classes at the university system to talk about those things. That's fine. But that's not what should be in our K-12 space. It really is about educating our kids. And if you have, you know, 40% of your kids not reading on grade level, you know, why are you wasting time on these other things anyway? I mean, you need to be focusing in on the things that matter, civics, you know, science, math, reading, all those things. And I think that transparency tool will allow our parents in Florida to have an understanding of what's going on in schools. And look, the way it works is there's local school board elections. Parents have the right to go to their local school board and petition. They have the right to go to their schools. By having transparency gives them the tool to be able to exercise that right. That's simply
what it is.
And
also, you know, as a former school board member, right, that tool would be great for a school board member because then there's evidence. It's either there or it's not.
Exactly.
Right? Where before, you know, it's very difficult because without that kind of transparency. So I think it's going to help resolve the issues parents have with that transparency, and then also get that transparency is going to provide the local districts with the evidence of what is and isn't being taught in their schools.
And look, we're no longer in a phase, right, where parents are just saying we're leaving it to the so-called education experts.
Yeah.
Now, parents are education experts. They're their child's first teacher, and they should have knowledge and transparency on what their kids are being taught in schools. Taxpayers should have that transparency because they're paying for this.
Yeah.
So I think it's a great tool. Look, it's not a gotcha. It's
right.
The way that things should work, so that getting everybody working together again, right?
Yeah.
Getting parents involved in the child's education is a great recipe for success, and transparency is part of that.
Yeah, I think the transparency removes the whole gotcha thing, right?
And
it's great for everyone involved in education, from the parents to the student to the educator. So, boy, we could go on. These are great things happening in Florida, and just appreciate your leadership and the leadership from Florida, Commissioner Diaz. But before we let you go, we always have our guests answer one question about, share with us some piece of trivia or information about Florida that is most people wouldn't know.
Well, you know, there's always been a question about how Tallahassee became the capital of Florida.
Yep.
And if you look at modern Florida, most people, me being from South, like, you know, it's so far away. How did we end up there in this, you know, not densely populated area of the state? And so the story goes that, you know, at the time when Florida was a territory and became a state, that there was no populated areas really south of kind of the Big Bend, so to speak. And you had St. Augustine or Jacksonville, that area, and you had Pensacola. And so when they were deciding, they were putting together a government, where was the legislature going to meet? Where was going to be the capital? They argued back and forth. And so they decided to get on horses. And one crew left from the East Coast and, you know, the Jacksonville area, and one crew left from Pensacola. And they met at a hill about halfway, and that's where Tallahassee is. And there are hills. There's apparently a location there where there was a Chili's or something like that, where it was actually a location where they met and they started to form the state government. That's how we ended up that capital. And I know there's more stories. You know, the other piece of trivia is, I think in the early 70s, the legislature, there was a move to try to get the capital moved to the center part of the state, to Orlando. But there happened to be a speaker at the time that was from the Tallahassee area.
Oh,
and so that's how we ended up with the modern capital we have today. And that there's two sides of that, right? A lot of people unhappy with the way it looks.
Could have been just the high rise?
The high rise.
Yeah.
Instead of playing on the traditional historic aspects of the historic capital that we have there today, it kind of had a modern building put in there. So I think that all jives and goes together.
Yeah, you're right. That was one of the things that kind of struck me the first time I went to the capital of Florida, is that when looking for the state house, you look for something that's more traditional, colonial looking, and there's this skyscraper. That's it.
It's frustrating when I have this thing, me and my wife, when we travel around, like today, I'd like to go see the Oklahoma Capitol. Wherever I go, I try to go visit the Capitol. It's depressing because everybody has these beautiful capitals. You know, God forbid you go to Texas, you know, that Capitol is incredibly stunning. And we ended up with this modern building, and they really didn't take advantage of the look of the historic Capitol. And there was the space to do that, right? They could have. I think they rushed it because they didn't want the Capitol moving to Orlando.
Nice. Well, Manny, thank you so much for being on Swimming Upstream again. Florida and yourself, definitely examples of a state and a commissioner that are swimming against the currents of education and the status quo. And thank you for all your great work.
Thank you for listening. And remember, our children may only be 22% of our population, but they represent 100% of our future. If you found this conversation valuable, subscribe to our YouTube channel and find us on your favorite podcast platform. Swimming Upstream is part of the Strategos Podcast Network. To view the entire lineup of our shows, visit our website, strategosgroup.com.